Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
require legal advice, I very bluntly ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. So essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together. How much of what do you think of a social network? Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number in the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get them one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at your remedies and the law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can disclose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, I thank you so very much for that disclaimer. Ladies and gentlemen, back in the mid-1990s, I was at the height of my career as a manufacturing wholesale retail jeweler. I was on top of the mountain, and everything was me, and this was before I fell from the peaks, from the mountaintop, which I'm blessed that that happened because it taught me, it brought me to a very personal relationship with our sovereign, our king. Putting that aside for the moment, I also at that time became very, very interested in law and became a member of a group called Right Way Law. It was headed by two people, a guy named Rick Schramm, Rick and Jeannie's wife Schramm, and another fellow named Jack Smith. Rick was a hardcore litigator. He very, very, very much like Brother John in regards to this is the law, this is the procedures, these are the rules, and, you know, let's make it happen. Jack Smith, on the other hand, was, well, great guy. Loved the man. Loved how he tied scripture into what the law is and so forth. It's in fact, I've lost it for right now. I hope to find it in storage sometime soon. But he taught how the scriptures directly related to our founding documents, and it was, you know, it was annotated. Our founding documents he annotated to the scriptures, and it was really awesome. Anyways, in this group, when I went to studied in this group for many years, I learned basically the body parts of litigation. First, in civil litigation, you start with a complaint. But you don't go from the complaint. When you have a complaint and you answer the complaint, the next option is to immediately counter-complaint, which will be heard first, by the way. And the reason for that is twofold. Just as in our days when we were young juveniles and we got into fist fights and things like that, you never let somebody hit you without hitting them back. And that's what the counter-complaint was. Once that counter-complaint was filed, if there's any part of litigation that can be described as having fun, it would be discovery. Discovery is where you have fun. Discovery is comprised of basically three parts. And this follows. This is what you get into immediately upon the complaint and the counter-complaint. You have something called interrogatories. You have something called production of documents. And you have something called admissions and depositions. They're kind of tied together, requests for admissions and depositions. So tonight, Brother John is going to explain to us how to have fun in litigation. This might not be the take that he sees it through. We're going to learn real quickly since he's going to be the one presenting it tonight. But it's what I find to be fun because this is where you get to outsmart the liars, the cheats, and the thieves in particularly banking or credit cards or things like that. So without further ado, it's my sincere pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John. Go ahead, buddy.
Good evening, Michael. Thank you for that very kind and gracious introduction. Can you hear me okay?
Crystal clear, sir. Crystal clear.
Okay, wonderful. There's an old saying, it goes, to succeed in battle, a king must have many advisors. And there's also an old saying that when you go to war, make sure you have enough ammunition. When you go to battle, make sure you have a satisfactory amount of ammunition. Because the other, when you're in battle, the other party can just do things to use up your ammunition until you've used it up. And when you've used up your ammunition, you can't shoot back. Then any pot shot that they take may take you down. And to that end, many people consider a visit to the court, especially civil matters, not just criminal, but civil matters also, a battle. Except that the ammunition in these battles is information. And information can, but will either make or break you. And to that end, sometimes the counselor that you have with you in court, some will have a counselor represent you, like a liar, you know. And it depends on what, you know, who you're talking to, whether it's spelled L-A-W-Y-E-R or L-I-A-R. But they're still a liar, you know. And there's a, apart from the Sixth Amendment, which is very, very clear and states specifically that an individual has the right to assistance of counsel no matter what, and in the Sixth Amendment. And so what happens is that the Sixth Amendment, you need to be very, very careful when you're looking at that and you're working with that. It says, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Okay? It doesn't say to have a lawyer represent you. The term representation is a contrivance that was established by a group of lawyers at the American Bar Association in 1891 was the first contrivance, and then in 1903, 1907, 1908 is when they actually put it into play. And what happens is they're following old British law where the wealthy, the aristocrats, you know, the those that the landowners and such, when they didn't want to appear in court, they created a mechanism, a legal mechanism, by with which they could have somebody else appear on their behalf and had full the ability to answer, respond, and make decisions for them. And that was called being represented. And there, it's very, very important that you understand the difference of assistance of counsel and representation. There today we had a hearing today that an individual appeared before the judge and says, so is John representing you? And she just categorically says, no, he's my assistant of counsel. And she was very, very explicit about it. And the judge, he says, well, are you a licensed member of the bar in this state? And I says, no, sir. I've been retired for over 20 years, and I'm not currently practicing in any state. But, he let me appear with her, and we carried through the hearing. And but it's the hearing, as we got through it, there's an item that had we considered it in advance that we would have put on discovery, and the ammunition that we needed to put this one to bed, we didn't get it right away off the bat when she was first sued. And to that end, it's been kind of a legal running gun battle to get that information. And it's hard, the other party, because the time for discovery has long passed, is not required to produce this documentation that in this person's case is exculpatory, meaning that it proves they're innocent of and that this other party can't legally pursue them. And the judge got a little annoyed with the other party today. In fact, I was very happy at how annoyed he got with the other party. And the attorney that was representing, quote-unquote, their plaintiff or the other party, to the point where, you know, at one point he says, what's the matter? Isn't your party responding to you? This thing's been going on for a couple of years now. It's a 2022 or 2020 event, and he said, you know, I'm tempted to just summarily dismiss this, and that would have been in favor of the person that I was there for. And the attorney, she took responsibility for the mistake, but what's happening is she did something really monstrous and says, well, it's the fault was on our part, and we made a mistake. But she gave us the opportunity to take another bite at the apple on the issue of discovery and the fact that they hadn't produced it. In fact, the judge says, hey, you can file a motion, and he gave time for the person I was there with to file a response to that, and the defendant's response, and then gave time for the plaintiff to reply. It is brutal trying to get information in the latter parts of the trial and the process of a case. Getting it up front is a almost free the slaves moment. And like Michael was talking, you can even ask questions like, have you stopped stealing your mother's cookies yet? You know, those are, there's three primary types of discovery. There's admissions, interrogatories, and then there's the request for documents. And what happens is that on the admissions, you can put on their admit or deny or true or false, and they have to circle one of them. They're not allowed to go into this war and peace explanation of why you disagree with the question. And what Michael was saying, sometimes, have you stopped beating your spouse? Yes or no? Oh, you stopped, but you were doing it for a long time. Guilty? Yeah. No. I haven't stopped. No, you're still guilty. However it slices out, some of the I do have to admit that sometimes we write the interrogatories and the admissions so that no matter what answer they get or they give you, it's some good ammunition that you can use in court, and that some of the information you get that way, even though the judge is going to pick it up very quickly, you know, the moment you start to use the discovery in court, they're going to see that you kind of kind of bent it in your favor a little bit or a lot of bit. But nonetheless, the basics of the information that you derive are still wholly acceptable in court. Do not wait to tell your case is in full swing to start to do something with discovery. If you think there isn't any discovery to be had, sit down with some friends. Talk about the case, ones that you can have know that you're comfortable with implicit confidence. Sit down, toss it back and forth. Ask each other the questions. Hey, well, what about this and what about that? And if you were the other party, what would you do? And you'll be shocked to find out that you can create and come up with just an incredible amount of discovery that may help you through the trial. And see, there's another part of discovery. See, once you've asked the opposing party that question, or asked them on the interrogatories or the admissions to either admit, deny, or explain this, or you've asked, and then the third type of discovery is called, actually the technical title is called production. That's where you can ask them for documents, etc. But you've asked them to produce a document, you know, and they know that you've already asked them to produce it. They know you're looking for it. And they're going to start trying to figure out how to respond to and against that. Now, there's a handful of cases where there's discovery that had I been on board immediately, had I been the one that was on board immediately, that I would have asked for certain things right away. And we've had students that have come to us that they had a case already in process, but the discovery aspect of it was never executed as it could have or should have been. And some of those, and that the people that were helping them previously to our participation didn't do anything in the line of discovery, and the time for discovery had completely expired. And some of these cases are federal cases, and the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, discovery has some very, very, well, actually, they're very standardized. At the state level, it's very not standardized. And sometimes, you know, in like the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, the FRCP, discovery, you can have what's called level one, level two, and level three discovery. But the what happens is that they, you can go through a point where you can ask interrogatories, meaning you're asking a question. On, you know, on this date, such and such occurred. What did you do? Did you respond or did you just witness it? You know, there you can ask all those kind of questions. Or true or false, you saw the accident. Or admit or deny, you saw the accident personally. Admit or deny, you did not respond to help the injured party, admit or deny. And, you know, and so you, and you can use those either in interrogatories or admissions. And there's a limit in many cases to how many questions or admissions or interrogatories that you can ask. In some cases, it's 75 for admissions. But what happens is that you want to make certain that you consider gathering up as much ammunition as possible before you go into battle. And the battle is going to take place in that courtroom. Now, here, think about this. If you're the opposing party and they see how much ammunition you've been amassing, i.e. evidence, then they're going to think twice about certain tactics. They're going to think twice about certain responses, because in their mind, and remember, you and the opposing party don't think exactly alike. In fact, you probably think very different. And something that you may not even catch because you did discovery, because you sat down with your wife or your best friends, or instead of going bowling that night, you and talking about the wife, the dog, the kids, and the two-car garage, you know, you talked about the accident. And you talk, and you get all of your bowling buddies to talk about what questions that they would ask. Tell them, hey, look, I've got discovery here, you know, and it's due next week or the following week. What can I do? Somebody might ask a question that the other party may consider very embarrassing. And to that end, it maybe touches on a subject that the other party has no desire to have brought up in court. And I've seen two very, very substantially important cases where individuals were, I would later find out, the first one, I was still in law school. The attorney for the other party commented that she, and this was a lady defense attorney, this is back in the late 70s, she said, I told my client not to ask or not to get involved in any part of that because it would have brought up a whole new aspect to the trial, and they had already asked discovery on that, and we had no good way to go. And what happened was is that they ended up non-suiting the assailing party. They weren't, this wasn't criminal, so it wasn't the prosecutor and the defense, but it was the attorney that that had actually filed the case for the damages in this case for wrongful death damages. They asked a question regarding this lady's use of medications and alcohol. And her husband was killed in the car accident, and it was a civil matter. They were suing for damages, and she was driving. And so what happened was is that I come to find out 2.5 years after the case was over, and during law school we sat in the case and we sat in the courtroom and, you know, listened to some of the back and forth on it. But what happened was is that the other party had been drinking, had a blood alcohol level of 0.01. So it was like a single beer and an hour or two afterwards, so there was almost no. But she didn't let her party bring that up, and because it would have opened questions that would have come back on her, and it could have been catastrophic. But they ended up non-suiting, and here's what they ended up doing. They ended up non-suiting with the insurance company, and the insurance company ended up paying $20,000 worth of damages and injuries, which was the limit on the policy that the other party had, and they agreed to non-suit, and the insurance companies bought off on it. And so how much ammunition you have in your bandolier or your backpack, you know, or in your bag or in your trunk or your briefcase is very, very important. Discovery is exclusively about getting that type of ammunition. There's certain cases where I recommend immediate discovery, certain questions that just implicitly, the moment you file and you file the judge gives, you know, when you file, the judge allows them 20 days Monday next to respond. And remember, if you don't, God bless you, Michael, but if you don't respond or they don't respond, you can take a default judgment and you'll never, ever, ever get to discovery. In that case, you don't need to. But in one case that we did recently out in Arizona, we were waiting to get to discovery. This gentleman had a mortgage note and the judge was extremely cautious, and it turns out we later learned that he that the opposing law firm for Bank of America, BANA, that he used to be counsel for with this law firm that was counsel for BANA, Bank of America National. And what happened was that when we were requesting discovery, he held off on after Bank of America National responded, he held off on letting us get to discovery and let Bank of America make multiple motions before we got to discovery to categorically get the case dismissed on a technicality in favor of the defendant. And he was excruciatingly careful. But had we got to a place where we would have been able to propound discovery, and we had discovery all ready to go, I'm certain that we would have won the case, because in this particular case, we were looking for a piece of evidence that completely took care of the plaintiff and proved that Banna didn't have standing. And in discovery is where you can get all of that. It's extremely important that you do not marginalize or nominalize the value of discovery. We are still plagued by the ideas of how we could have gotten around the fact that the judge never allowed the discovery period to open. Had we been able to do that, this plaintiff had filed four, not one, not two, not three, but four previous cases, and they had all been dismissed on a technicality. But had we had this one single piece of evidence that we were looking for, desperately hoping for, trying with everything we had to get to discovery, they never, ever, ever allowed us to get to discovery. And so it's when we're dealing with situations like this, it's of critically prime importance that discovery, getting the evidence that you need and knowing why you need that, is very, very important. That's one thing that when you engage the team here, we may not just do things on the individual information provider's scale. We actually reach out to a lot of people, and whatever information provider you end up with, they that may be on point, just know that they're not the only person that's out there. And there are information providers that I am not on point with. They're on point. And but I offer my assistance, you know, all the time. And what happens is that the strategies that prevent tragedy dictate discovery. So early on in your case, having strategy sessions and meetings with the team, and some people say, well, Michael Edwards is not an information provider, and that's correct. But, he's the fly on the wall on every single conference call. He's the fly on the wall on every single communication between information providers and students. And to that end, he's learned an awful lot. So you'll find that in a lot of the cases that we do, especially that one a couple years ago where the gentleman had multiple felony grand jury indictments, and we put together a letter and a motion before he was ever arraigned, before he ever appeared to plead, that the prosecutor, looking at that information, realized the gravity of the reality and the facts. And we were able to help this particular gentleman craft a letter and document what was happening in such a way that the prosecutor voluntarily, unsolicitedly, dismissed all the grand jury indictments and felony grand jury indictments. But see, that's part of the brainstorming that happens the moment and that we come on board. That gentleman, by the way, he corrected his status or at least had his information, his data on his status corrected immediately. That was the first thing that he did. And see, the thing there is something that you need to remember is that when a person is an American national, they you have to have an injured party with a verified complaint. And if you do not have an injured party with a verified complaint, then it's hard, if not impossible, to prosecute them. Now, there are judiciary that don't understand the difference between a U.S. citizen and an American national. And he or she will just flippantly, without with callous and disdain, without any consideration for what's truly at stake, make decisions on motions. And here's something that's becoming very rampant. They make decisions on their own merit. The judiciary is not allowed to make decisions without hearing arguments from both sides, unless it says oral arguments waived. They have to, you know, if it's a civil matter, they got to have both parties there, regardless of whether the judge, what the judge may know to be true. He or she is not allowed to rule without hearing both parties. There's too many times when one party came up with something that the other didn't know about, or and the judiciary didn't know about, and changed the whole face of the argument and precipitated a different answer. It's very, very important when we look at criminal matters that the prosecutor answers all of the complaints and the everything that's raised to the judge, to the judiciary. If the judiciary is just flippantly answering the questions, there's a judiciary in Ohio right now that's resigning and retiring because he ruled on 17 different issues in a case a few years back where an individual is currently serving federal he's on vacation at Club Fed, he's currently retiring, he's resigning, because the 17 issues in this one case, the gravity of them, I think it's his intention just to leave and bail out. He used to be the Chief Justice in this one particular courthouse. Remember, there are 93 federal courthouses in the United States. It some states have only one. Some states have multiple, like three or four. You know, you go to California, there's a federal courthouse in Los Angeles, one in San Francisco, and one in San Diego. You know, and the Ninth Circuit oversees those. It's but what happens is that when these judiciary are making judgments clean on their own, and you've already got interrogatories, admission, and production that contradicts what they're saying, now we can stop the judiciary. When the judiciary rules on something and says, wait, you know, object, Your Honor, motion for reconsideration, why did you rule on that? We've already got this information on discovery from the other party. This is completely an opposite to it. And we've asked certain problem children judiciary to not only recuse themselves, but with some level of gravity that they ended up resigning. And that's so discovery is an extremely powerful tool. Having the information you need in advance, and not being sheepish or bashful, but going in there and just outright asking for it, demanding, where is the original note in this? What was your probable cause? When you said when you approached the vehicle, you smelled marijuana. How could you smell marijuana when the windows were up and there's a breeze out that night? Asking these types of questions very, very important. And that's another thing. There's a lot of civil cases that, I mean, criminal cases that you have civil recourse. And in certain cases, if the criminal case violated your rights and they deprive you of certain rights, you can take a civil criminal case, and turn it into a federal civil case, and then it becomes an income opportunity. So the things that are extremely important there are that you take time with whoever, however, to develop and cultivate your discovery. If you have, especially if you have a civil matter, get help right away. And I don't mean representation. The assistance of counsel. To succeed at war, a king must have many counselors. Get friends that can sit down and generate the questions that produce the ammunition that can make a difference in your case. With that, I'm going to hand the microphone back over to Michael Early. We're going to open up Q&A now. If you can refrain to the subject matter topic, that's very helpful, and it helps gel up and steal in what we've learned tonight and what we're learning with our fellow person on the call. But if you have a question that is not part of the subject matter topic, we're honored and pleased to accept that question. To that end, back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael.
Well, thank you so very much, Brother John. Thank you. I hope that tonight during the Q&A that someone brings up the question to Brother John regarding motion to compel. Motion to compel. Anyways, before we get into that and open up for Q&A, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand, press star 2. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, simply look to the center right of your monitor. You'll see a place where there is the silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click inside of it, type away your comment or question. On the outside underneath, I believe you'll find a place to put your name, some other information, hit submit, and then it will pop up on my end, and I'll be happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. Also, too, while we wait for someone to do what? Press star 2 on your keypad. That's a good idea. I want to share that we have a new information provider that is our gentleman that has agreed to join us as a new information provider when some certain things happen very soon. We believe will happen very soon. I think those of you that own foreign currency know what I'm talking about. Johnny Ringo is here tonight. Johnny Ringo was the lead investigator for Mr. Tony Davis, has spent more hours than I can count in courthouses, particularly Washington, the library, and so forth, pulling up information that you just don't find anywhere else. And his bird dogging has been, it's known about how good his bird dogging is. So I've unmuted you, Johnny, if you just want to say hello and greet everybody. I've also left a couple messages for you on your phone. I don't know if you got them.
No, I never got them, Michael, but thank you for the introduction. And I thought I'd just tune in and see what's going on with you individuals and how you're treating the law. And I hope you're badgering it, but in the federal sense, it really doesn't work too good. It's because most of the judges are very, one-sided when it comes to it, and it's always on the persecution side, prosecution.
Well, they want to protect the trust.
Johnny
Ringo, did you say persecution or prostitution?
Both.
Welcome to the call, my honored brother.
When it comes to federal judges, you do not want to get me started on that because I've in the past decade or so, I've been in roughly
probably about 86 federal trials on this Title 18 that I've been researching for over 23 years. And it always falls on deaf ears. And even though there's overwhelming evidence persuading it that it does not exist, they refuse, totally refuse to accept anything to that nature. But, no, you don't want to get me going on federal judges.
Anyways. Hey, well, try this one out for size. I was at Chino's men's prison. This is back in the 70s. And they had a sign over the cell block door, the entrance, the gate to enter one of the cell blocks, had a sign that says, "All prosecutors will be violated."
In more ways than one.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that one. And you know what? It's strange. That was up there for 2.5 years.
Funny it wasn't a permanent fixture. It should have been.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It is truly good to hear your voice, Johnny Ringo.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right.
I thought I'd just tune in and see what you guys got to say. It's very interesting all the time.
Okay, Johnny, I'm going to go ahead and mute you back out. If you have anything you'd like to contribute, please just press star 2.
Okay, yeah, no.
Okay. So next is Bruce from Texas. Go ahead, Bruce.
Hey, good evening. So question back on the discovery topic. What typically is the time limit to do your discovery?
That's a good question. The court usually establishes that for you. What will happen is that they'll establish a discovery period. It's usually because after somebody's propounded discovery, certain statutes, most primarily civil statutes, both state and federal, give the respondent 21 or 30 days to respond to discovery. So what happens is that usually the discovery portion of the trial usually, or the case is usually 90 days. And that gives you time to propound discovery to them, and even if they're a little bit late. And then discovery, remember, isn't automatically filed with the court. You get the discovery back, and if they don't respond to you, then Michael's point about the motion to compel, that's usually the first time before the discovery period is completed that the court may get involved in it. And what happens is that's used to get the other side to answer. And sometimes the other side will send a quote-unquote courtesy copy to the court, you know, so that they can prove that they filed when the motion to compel has been laid on them. But 90 days is pretty much a standard.
Okay. Recent divorce case in Montana, a buddy of mine was divorcing his estranged crack addict wife, and they never responded to discovery. He responded to everything they asked for, financial disclosures and everything else, and the spouse's, the wife's party never responded to anything. And so the question is there a way to compel somebody to do that, or you just, you know, go on with what you have, which is what they ended up doing, is going on to trial with what they had, which was nothing. And he ended up, of course, Montana is super, super, I don't even want to call it a purple state. It's a super blue state, and they raked him over the coals, even though she had perjured herself and basically committed all kinds of financial fraud because she didn't disclose anything.
What stage of that trial?
That was in Montana.
Is it completed, closed out, adjudicated?
Yes, it's completed, closed out. He ended up having to pay her about 65% of everything he had, including separate property out of family trust and stuff.
Okay. That's a shame he did not use the motion to compel that Michael was talking about at the beginning,
okay,
the onset of the
call.
Yeah,
I never heard him talk about that, so I'm pretty sure he did not do that. We're pretty sure that his attorney was in cahoots with the other attorney and with the judge in this case. But how do you prove that?
Right.
He finally, after 2.5 years of litigation and all kinds of legal bills, he finally said, screw it. Let's just write a big check and tell everybody to go pound sand.
So
that's what happened. But motion to compel is what they should have done.
Right. The in probate and divorce, those are the two really brutal ones that the longer you stretch it out, the only people that really win are the attorneys.
Right.
That was
evident in this case.
Yeah, there was a probate case where an individual was they originally thought the estate was worth $2.7 million, and there were five heirs, they had agreed to.
Did you mean heirs, H-E-I-R-S, or heirs, E-R-R-O-R-S?
No, this was H-E-I-R-S.
Okay.
And thank you, Bruce. Yeah, people. There were five heirs for the estate, and what happened was that it was 2.7, and they all had amicably agreed, and there was an attorney. The whole family had one attorney that was going to take care of everything, and it was actually a Nevada case. It was actually California / Nevada, but this one attorney was going to take care of everything. And this individual, I call these individuals lampreys. I don't know if you're familiar with that, what that type of fish is, but up in the Great Lakes, a lamprey is a snake-like creature that has looks like somebody cut the head off the snake and has teeth on it, and it gloms onto a fish and completely devoids the body of any nutrients and thus killing the fish.
It's a parasite. It's a parasite type animal.
It's a predatorial parasite. Exactly.
Okay.
And so this gentleman, he was doing some work for this lady, ended up smoozling himself up to her as a semi-boyfriend, got into her bed, and then this, at the time, 58-year-old widow, says, I can get more of that from you. And all of a sudden, it turns out the estate ended up being worth $13.9 million.
Oh, wow.
Well, when it was all said and done, this gentleman created so much tension between the heirs, H-E-I-R-S, that they started to make E-R-R-O-R-S. And what happened was that the siblings, et cetera, got to the place where what happened was is that she ended up with $672,000, and she had the larger share. The attorneys
Oh, wow.
Got all the rest. And so when it comes to divorce or probate, I humbly recommend that everybody try to settle as best they can out of court and without the attorneys.
Exactly.
Yeah. And So, because the mole, yeah, so he's just cutting his losses and, you know, saying, hey, look, I'm just going to stop right here. We're going to call it good. Even though he, could he have gotten more? Yeah, quite possibly. And right now I'll tell you, with what I know, I can usually sway the payout percentage much higher than they would have ordinarily got. And I've been in those situations and I've seen them. And you notice, yeah, I was very careful to say sway the payout percentage because, the costs that end up being passed on to the estate or to the marriage begin to go up very drastically. And even though the percentage increases very, very quickly, the actual cash value payout depreciates unbelievably fast. So sometimes the better part of wisdom is just to close it out like he was saying. And, you know, there's right now, could he possibly go back and say, hey, look, I want to reopen this and appeal the decision because his discovery was never responded to? Could we make a case to be successfully do that? Oh, yeah. Is it wise to?
No.
Probably not.
Probably not. Well, the follow-up to that is about a year after things were finalized, he was trying to track her down. This particular guy has some serious health problems and at least wanted to have a letter delivered to her that says, you know, okay, because of the stress you caused me, I'm basically dying and I have, you know, somewhere between a few months and maybe a few years to live, according to what the doctors say, and kind of wanted to, you know, more for spite than anything. But they also tracked her down and found that the court was actually kind of interested in tracking her down for perjury in several situations. And so between a Texas case and a Montana case, she's looking at a minimum of about 12 years. So,
thoughtful citizen.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
so being a thoughtful citizen, he spent some money on a private eye, tracked her down, and basically assisted in her being served.
Accidentally let the court know where she was?
Yes, accidentally. Well, the attorney involved with the he hired an attorney who hired a PI. I think is the process. You have to do that legally, and so that was all court sanctioned, I guess, is the proper way to term it, or at least it was not done in a shady manner, other than he could have let it go, but he wanted to get exact his pound of flesh, and she got something like 10 million pounds of flesh out of him. So
when I was young, there were some things that the atrocities that happened in court, you know, like the lack of response and discovery, things like that. I was a rebel without a cause almost, except I had a million causes, and they cut me to the bone and hurt my heart to watch what was going on. And I was ready to fight every single one of them and take them all the way as far as could possibly be taken. And there were times where I began to realize there's sometimes the wisdom in just, you know, there's a difference between winning a battle and losing the war. And this particular gal, like I was saying in the probate, she ended up winning the battle. She went from a 20% equal share of the five heirs, HEIRS, to be a 55%er.
Wow.
But at 55%, the total distribution was just over $1.1 million that was remaining that the attorneys hadn't devoured.
Wow.
And she got almost $700,000 of that. And has she settled?
That's winning the battle and losing the war.
Yeah, and that's just a hair more than she would have gotten
at the previous
2.7 exactly.
Yep.
You know, and she and they had actually already signed the agreement. And we're going to take it before the judge to have it blessed when this third party got involved with her and says, no, get it back. You know?
Wow.
And her percentage went from 20 to 55%. The increase in what she actually got paid was only about 14%.
Wow.
But the
other parties all sound like spent money on lawyers and didn't make anything for it.
Yeah, and that doesn't include all the 2.5 years that it took to waste.
Yeah. Yep.
Over $10 million.
Wow.
Or $12 million. It took that many years to waste over $10 million or $12 million. So.
What was the name of that fish again?
Of the what?
The parasite fish.
Oh, lamprey.
Lamprey. So, like the Three Stooges law firm was Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe, and lamprey. Crazy stuff. Anyway, that was all I had was remedy did he maybe have?
Yeah. Actually, the lamprey is a member of the eel family, and they call it the vampire of the Great Lakes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just, it's the word lamp conjugated with the word prey, P-R-E-Y, only one
mm-hmm.
P. Lamp, L-A-M-P-R-E-Y. And you can put eel on there. Just do you can do a search. But the end of that thing's face and its mouth is scary just to see. And I actually watched, we have a sailboat. It's a Highlander that holds three world titles on the Great Lakes. And we were in there at the port when this boat come in with one of their crew had fallen overboard and a lamprey had latched onto her right side just below her arm. And
oh, wow.
it was not pretty. It
Those
was horrible.
I'm looking at pictures and it looks like something you'd see in a horror movie.
It is. It's something right out of a horror movie. You can't make this stuff up. Reality is worse than fiction.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, Bruce, is there anything else we could do for you tonight?
No, that was it. Answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Martin and Michael, back to you. Michael?
I had to unmute.
Yeah.
You know.
Had to unmute, yeah.
All the time. Yeah. I was going to say, ask you. I forgot now. All right, next is Armenta. Go ahead, Armenta.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Good evening, Armenta.
Good evening. How are you, John?
Hey, better than I deserve. Better than I deserve.
Well, that's excellent. Go ahead.
How may we be an asset or a blessing for you, Armenta?
Yes, I wanted to follow up with you concerning the situation or case with the garnishment that was wrongfully taken from my mother's account to see if you had reviewed those documents I sent and maybe we could set up a meeting. There is now a court date set up for that. So I guess they put the cart before the horse.
Oh, boy. Armenta, let's tomorrow I am tied up pretty much all day. I had a little accident. A 4x8 sheet of building material was picked up by the wind and, like a fly swatter, hit me and carried me off a roof, and I took the 9-foot elevator ride to the ground flat on my back. Yeah. And I woke up and I wasn't dead. And that was about 15, 16 weeks ago. And I'm going in for follow-up surgery tomorrow. So I'm hoping to be out Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon. But let's set a time up with Michael. If after the call, right after we get done with the call tonight, reach out to Michael and let's schedule an appointment for Friday, probably mid-morning or midday. How's that sound?
That sounds great. That sounds great.
Okay, I've already scheduled it. I've already put that in. So, Armenta, I just need for you to call me about 15 minutes before you'd like to call, and then I'll network that with John, and we'll go from there, okay? You have my direct phone number, correct?
What's that?
Armenta, you have my direct phone number?
Yes, I do, yes.
Yeah, just give me
a
call about 15 minutes before.
Okay, that sounds great.
And Armenta, if I could ask a little bit of grace here for convenience for my side, and to confirm that I've got everything that you need, could you put all that package together and resend it? And if you've gotten anything new, including you said they got a court date, et cetera,
send me
everything on and put it all together as one single package. But the update, especially with the court date, all that, and anything that's been filed with the court by either side, if you could put all that together, update that package, and shoot it off to me before that time. If you could shoot it off to me tomorrow sometime, I won't be able to read it tomorrow.
Correct.
You know, I'll be in surgery a good portion of the day, you know, so. But I'll try to get through it, re-review it on Thursday, and be prepared for Friday.
That sounds great, and I want to let you know that my prayers are with you, blessings over the hands that are touching you and caring for you, and we look for you to come out good as gold.
Well, you're very gracious. I appreciate your kind thoughts. Thank you. You the girl.
Yes.
Okay.
So thank you. I will get that done, and I'll send it to you, Michael, the entire information, package of information.
As soon as you're able to, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Back to you, Martin and Michael.
All right, next, Bruce is back. I guess he's here for more punishment.
Yeah, I did. Just wanted to let you know I'm still having problems getting to the two websites.
Okay.
Your remedy is in the law and American by birth.
All right, just try this. Instead of www. While we're on the phone right now, try https://yourremediesinthelaw.com. yourremediesinthelaw.com. Try that right now, please.
Without the www?
Without the www.
Okay. I'll try that right now.
Yeah, and when it comes to the Americans by birth, you can just conjugate all those words, Americans.
It's
American by birth. There's no S. It's American by birth.
Yeah. Okay. Your remedy is in the law without the www. It does the same thing. It says index of and gives me a CGI bin date and number. Let me try the other one. Americans by birth. .com.
All one word.
Yeah. Without the www, just https://americanbybirth.com. bit defender tries to stop it. I said, I understand. Take me there anyway. Are you sure you want to continue? Yes.
Don't worry about that. Now I'm trying HTTP without the S. There it is. All right, do HTTP :// your remedy is in the law. I just popped it up.
Okay, so American by birth worked. It says a little not secure message, which I don't worry about because I have all kinds of virus protection and stuff. And then the other one is your remedy is in the law, HTTP, your remedy is in the law. Let's see what it does there. I didn't do anything because I didn't put .com.
Yeah, I got both of them up. HTTP://, then AmericanByBirth.com, YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, AmericansRestoringAmerica.com.
Yeah, it came up doing that. So that appears to fix the problem.
Right. So that's what it is right now, and we have now everything migrated over to Iceland. There is nothing left in the servers here in the United States, thank heavens. And our archives are being restored as we speak. And so supposedly the archives are restored up through November. We have end of November, December, and January to finish. But that's another issue. So it's a different issue.
All right. Cool. Well, we problem solved. Thank you.
My pleasure. We got to get it back, though, to where people can just type it in and boom, they go. So
yeah.
It still has to be. All righty. Anything else, sir?
Nope. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let me check Freedoms Radio, ladies and gentlemen, real quick. And if those of you on the call, if you'd like, press *2 on your keypad just to, if you have any comments or questions, let me refresh here. Freedoms Radio, boom, refresh. Nobody's asking questions there. Double check. Back to you. Well, Brother John, I think that covers tonight. Any closing comments, sir?
No.
Wait a minute. Jennifer had a question. Let's get it real quick. Jennifer, are you there? Jennifer.
Well, my question wasn't, it was about when you asked me to get 9 signatures. What did you call that file name for 9 signatures? 3 different colors.
The certificate? Oh, okay. We'll discuss that on a direct call, okay?
Yeah. All right.
All right.
I missed tonight.
Call Michael right after this call, and we'll cover just with you privately, okay?
All right, thanks.
Okay.
All right. Any closing comments, John? We'll say goodnight.
Once again, it's truly an honor and a privilege to serve my fellow Americans restoring America beside all of you, and not just our listening audience, but also you, Martin, and you, Michael. Thank you.
That's our pleasure.
Thank you for the honor and the privilege of being able to serve with you all.
All right. Good evening. All right. So thank you all for joining us. Consider being again here tomorrow with my presentation of Mr. Slevin's limited liability company. I also will be covering how to clean up your credit score and how to use an aged limited liability company, attach it, associate it with another LLC that has a tremendous credit score, an awesome credit score. And between having cleaned up your credit, you being the manager of this aged LLC, and associating it with this other LLC that has a tremendous credit score, you're actually able to buy into lending. up to $1 million, $1 million+, you can buy into lending. So keep that in mind. We'll be covering that tomorrow night. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.